I decided that if I were going to do something introductory, I ought to do something which is rather general. So I start from sort of the beginning. In 1665, the clockmaker, Christian Huygens, noticed the two clocks hanging on a wall tended to synchronize the motion of their pendulums. A similar scenario occurs with two metronomes placed on a piano. They interact through vibrations in the wood and will eventually coordinate their motion. These effects are stable against small perturbations. This stability is in fact contradictory to the rules of classical mechanics and quantum mechanics for a few bodies. The stability simply does not happen in those kinds of situations. It's a result of friction. There's a model that was introduced by Kolmogorov and extensively analyzed by Arnold, which describes what's going on. This leads to a very complex phase diagram, which I will show you. And the diagram is one of the major points of this talk, is that the diagram is not something that was invented by a mathematician or a theoretical physicist. The diagram is something whose essence we can see in natural phenomena. Okay, that's the content of the talk. Huygens is also interesting to me, a statistical mechanic, since he wrote essentially the first book on statistics. Here is Huygens' picture of his experiment. Well, first he saw the thing happen with two clocks hanging on the wall. Then he hung his clocks on a plank of wood, put the plank of wood on two chairs, and watched with the pendula initially unsynchronized, and then he watched the vibrations interact through the wood. The thing got synchronized. He then published in the Royal Society. That leads us to ask, it seems reasonable to call what he saw an emergent phenomenon. That leads us to ask, what's an emergent phenomenon? The one thing you can say about this interaction is that it's a weak interaction. If you have two clocks on the wall or two metronomes on a piano, they do not strongly interact. Nonetheless, because of what is known in classical mechanics as the effect of a secular perturbation, after a long time, the effects of the interaction add up, and the adding up then produces the synchronization. So I want to ask whether the words emergent phenomena might perhaps talk about things that are only exposed after some careful analysis. However, the stability, as I already mentioned, of the locking contradicts results that are built into classical mechanics. Stability is not generic in classical mechanics. If you had asynchronization and you messed it up a little bit, the messing up would not go away. The thing would not approach a synchronized state. That synchronized state is stable as Huygens saw. So do the words emergent phenomena then describe surprising things that contradict the simplest form of our understanding of nature? Both of these readings are possible. I suggest a third. The words emergent phenomena then describe surprising things that turn out to be far richer and more interesting than we might have thought. I further suggest that the physical world is full of such things. I am pleased that Phil Anderson's point of view, which he says more is different, is reflected in this. The physics statement is that many body theory in comparison to few body theory has much more interesting stuff. Friction, synchronization, entropy, phase transitions, chaos, black holes, temperature, pressure are all examples of things that happen in large N systems and don't happen for small numbers of particles. The mathematical statement of that, perhaps, is that all of these are effects that result from limit processes. Mostly the limit is the number of particles goes to infinity. In theoretical analysis, they're best seen after the passage to the limit. This kind of behavior has been emphasized by Michael Berry and by one of our organizers, Bob Batterman. Physical theories often describe things that are not precisely present in the physical world. For example, the thermodynamic limit is not something that is ever reached, but is something that is approached. My view of this is that these are theoretical abstractions drawn from the limiting processes, and that these theoretical abstractions are much more the subject of physics than the dirty little real world. But I don't claim the first publication of this point. Back to Huygens. So one of the things that you can happen in a system with two frequencies, let's call the two frequencies omega 1 and omega 2, and imagine that omega 1 times one integer called p is closely equal to omega 2 times another small integer called q. Under these circumstances, even with weak interactions between the two components of the motion with frequencies omega 1 and omega 2, there tends to be synchronization between those two. They pull towards each other and they produce a common frequency called here omega. You could see such things in simulations very easily. Here's my colleague Jensen's simulation. Now, this is work that is in progress with Bjørn Jensen. You can see here a simulation of a pendulum with some friction, which has fallen into a state which is roughly two periods of the forcing. And this orbit in the phase plane of the pendulum will continue and be closed forever. Other possible kinds of motion are there. There's what is called quasi-periodic motion. This is motion which occurs on a torus. These are not the best representations of the torus in the world, but as I say, this work in progress. These are motions on a torus which winds around in two directions on the torus and never returns to its starting point. However, this motion is very regular motion on the torus. The third possibility is a chaotic motion. Here is the chaotic motion of a pendulum in Jensen's simulation. There are also even more famous chaotic motions, which I'm about to show you one if I have a little luck. So here is the chaotic motion that you see in what is called the Lorentz model. Ed Lorentz, in the 1960s, put together a model which he thought would be a simplified representation of what happened in a simple system of the weather. This was a model of motion in a three-dimensional space. I want to show you what happens because it's an interesting kind of chaotic motion and represents in a fair way other chaotic motions. There are two semi-stable motions around two different foci, one there and one there. And the system goes around those foci and then orbits out and goes around the other focus. And the number of times you go around each focus is not determined. So you might go three times around one and five times around another. And that would sometimes would be three and five, and sometimes it would be four and seven, and sometimes entirely different from that. This is the same picture again, a reference to Lorentz's original paper. This paper had a very important influence on intellectual life. Before that paper, or at least in the 19th century, people believed that the world was fundamentally predictable. And Lorentz took this simple system and showed that, in fact, it was very unpredictable. This is not one, but two orbits. The two orbits started from almost identical initial points, and then they moved in directions that were not the same. The two orbits are here shown. This is one of the coordinates, y versus time. The two orbits are here shown in red and in green. The two orbits start out initially inseparable. You can sort of see the red a little bit sticking out from behind the green after 10 units of time. But after 10 units of time, we begin to see the effect of exponential separation of orbits, which is the essence of Lorenz's thing. That exponential separation that shows that the two gives us the two orbits move off in different directions, and pretty soon the red motion and the green motion become totally uncorrelated with each other, and that will continue forever after. This exponential separation of orbits has had an important influence on intellectual thinking. Thinking, period. Synchrony and quasi-periodicity can produce rather predictable forms of motion. In synchronized cases, a small perturbation will generically give a small effect. In quasi-periodic cases, a small perturbation can give rise to a change that grows no faster in time than algebraically. In contrast, the chaotic situation is one of exponential separation of orbits in time. In this situation, we find that the difficulty of making predictions grows exponentially as we look further into the future. These possibilities have proven to be rather important in our qualitative view of the physical world. Wonderful thinkers, Karl Marx and Leo Tolstoy, have viewed the world as completely unpredictable. And there's also a tradition of viewing the world as quite predictable, as in Edward Burke or the U.S. Leader Donald Rumsfeld. But these views have been eroded away. We left with a situation in which both options, predictability and unpredictability, are possible given different circumstances. That makes life more interesting, but then harder to say something immediately about. This comment. Somebody muttered something. Oh, well. Comments are encouraged. Chaos is chaos. I reflect it.
Do you believe the written word or the spoken?
Neither. I believe the criticism of the audience. It takes a few more years of teaching than I have done in order to get really good at it. Okay. This kind of situation is these kinds of situations are represented in a model by Kolmogorov called the circle model, in which you have a variable x which progresses step by step in time. Xj plus 1 is some function of xj. That function includes a sine which gives one kind of period and an omega which then gives it another kind of period. The two frequencies built into this model are omega and unity, and one can then study in this so-called circle model what happens as a function of these two frequencies. Arnold did it with some beautiful mathematics. The diagram that comes out, not Arnold's, this was done in Copenhagen by Jensen and his students, but also done earlier by Jensen in a publication. The diagram that comes out is amazingly complex. Down here for small k, what you have is a function of one of these frequencies is a continuous smooth variation of the other frequency. When continuous, not with a continuous derivative, the two frequencies get locked together and produce a single frequency in these blue regions. For example, this is a 1 to 2 locking region. This is a 1 to 3 locking region. The white regions are regions of mixed quasi-periodic and periodic behavior. And these are the only things that happen, quasi-periodicity and periodic behavior, for K, the strength of the coupling, less than 1. If the coupling strength is greater than 1, other things can happen, including a richly chaotic behavior, as shown in the red at the top of this picture. There's been very extensive, okay, 5 minutes and 8 seconds, but there's been very extensive analysis of this by a whole group of different people. The Blue Region is synchronization, as already mentioned. It comes from Huygens. It's seen in biology, for example, in Martha McClintock's work in the synchronization of menstrual cycles in a women's dorm, and lots of other examples. The white regions are quasi-periodic behavior, and the stability of the quasi-periodic behavior is studied in a famous work by Llewellyn Tokins. There's experimental description of the quasi-periodic behavior, and so forth. I already talked about Lorenz, and there's also Smale's work on the red regions, which are chaotic behavior. This is the circle model shown two slides ago, in which xj plus 1 is xj plus omega plus coupling times sine 2 pi x. So it is a model in which there are the simplest possible model in which you have step-by-step behavior with two frequencies built in, and sometimes one, sometimes two coming out. And the amazing thing, or an amazing thing, is it says beautiful stuff to say here about the smooth variation, richly complicated things up there, in which for a region like this, many different behaviors are possible. Here, in each region of each point of the phase diagram, there is a lovable, unique behavior, and there's lots of stuff to be done for scientists. For example, these two papers in which I was more or less involved describe the onset of chaos, which occurs right there. You can't see the chaos because it's too narrow, but there is an onset of chaos, and we had lots of fun studying it, and my experimental colleagues had lots of fun finding it in the lab. That brings me to my next and almost last point. In contrast with the statements by Nancy Cartwright, I suspect most of the philosophers and maybe few of the physicists here know who Nancy Cartwright is, but she argues the physical models have a very small range of applicability in the real world. She uses the word dappled to describe the world, suggesting that it is a collection of many different things fading off into one another. I argue, on the other hand, that the effects of physical models are observable anywhere, everywhere. Why Huygens drew this rough picture in the age of Rembrandt, I think, is to say that all you need is the roughest experiment in order to get a synchronization. One does not need to do fancy things to see synchronization or quasi-periodicity. You don't have to go to the far ends of the universe. You just have to look at the moon, with monthly periods incommensurate with a year, and having its rotational motion synchronized to that of the Earth, so we always see the same face of the moon. To look at chaotic effects of model behavior, one can look sort of everywhere. Chaos is always around us. Indeed, models are important. Just reflect about how the present financial difficulties around the world were caused first by greed, but second by weak analysis of faulty economic models. I thank you. I'll stick back.
That's all right. You had this phase locking of the pendulum, and then you talked about the phase locking of menses in women. And I was just wondering whether you're really trying to suggest that those have some underlying similarity of cause.
That's a philosophical question outside of my range of competence. However, I would suggest that we look not necessarily at cause, but effect. And their phase diagrams, like the one that I showed you, can be helpful. If you change parameters, you might expect to see changes like those that occur in the phase diagram. You can then check and see whether the similarity of effect is related to a similarity of structure. So recognizing similarities in not a point in the diagram, but a region in the diagram can be very helpful in analyzing the relation between cause and effect.
You seem to emphasize the importance of having dissipation in getting locking. And I was didn't seem to me that in the KAM theorem that's necessary. So if you take, for example, the phase locking of the orbits of Jupiter and Saturn, I don't see that dissipation comes in there. It's simply the fact that you have an attractive interaction which creates a region of stability around the ratio 5 over 2 of the frequencies.
This is an interesting point, but analysis will show that if you start out with a locking and you have a small perturbation around the locking, you have an elliptical motion around that. In classical mechanics, what we call stability is an elliptical motion around what we call a stable point. In the pendulums, real pendulum with friction, stability means not that you get an elliptical motion in the phase plane, but that you get a return to the stable point. There is a qualitative difference between the two behaviors. That qualitative difference is based on the fact that you have a Liouville theorem in one case and not in the other.
Sorry, I don't understand. In the case of Jupiter and Saturn, they are stuck together because the strength of the interaction is large enough to hold them there against perturbations.
They are stuck together without, I believe. Now, I will defer to better knowledge, but I believe that if we did the three-body problem, we would get what I describe, namely, no matter how strong the forces holding things together, in classical mechanics, there is no stable synchronization.
I don't think that's right.
Good. That's...
Leo, I want to hold you to your definition of emergence, since this is a meeting about emergence and we have the different communities of philosophers and physicists. I hope we'll come back over and over again to the definition of emergence. So your definition is surprising things that turn out to be far richer and more interesting than originally thought. So I want to pin you down on surprising. Do you mean by surprising could not possibly have been predicted by a theoretical physicist just looking at the equations of the fundamental theory?
No.
What do you mean by surprising?
Surprising to the analyst, surprising to the writer. It is partially an ad hominem definition. Something that may be emergent for one observer may be obvious for another.
It'll be interesting to see how the definition of emergence tracks over the talks in the meeting.
I think we have time for one more question, then there'll be time for more questions in the discussion.
I wanted to ask about the synchronization and the role of friction. Has there been a study of that from the point of view of maximum or minimum entropy production principles? Do you have something to say about that, please?
I have little to say beyond the classical authors on that subject. I will point out, as you know just as well as I, that we can do entropy production kind of things in equilibrium systems, almost equilibrium systems. If you're away from equilibrium, it's a dicier subject. But I'm not quite sure what to say about this in this context, except that entropy itself is not there in classical mechanics. It is a result of an emergent view of what happens for large N.
Right, I'm trying to make the discussion go from classical mechanics to statistical mechanics.
Statistical mechanics is itself an emergent subject which occurs either for large N or for weak coupling of a system that itself obeys something like statistical mechanics. That is, I repeat, many, many, many of the most interesting subjects in nature are emergent in that the simplest version of natural laws do not predict them.